Welcome to UBS On Air. Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. For today's podcast, my guests will focus in on the topics of tax and estate planning in anticipation of potential changes to U.S. tax policy that have wide-ranging implications to be mindful of. So we look forward to having a productive and hopefully helpful conversation on this front today. Joining me here on the line for the conversation, glad to welcome from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Total Wealth Strategist America's Ainsley Carbone, and from our partners over at Janus Henderson Investors, glad to welcome Matt Sommer. Matt is a Senior Managing Director with the Retirement Strategy Group. So Matt, Ainsley, it's great to be with you both. Looking forward to our conversation, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I know there's quite a bit we want to hit on today. And Matt, I know recently you wrote about a topic, tax equalization. And this is something I want to get a bit further with you in a few moments as it relates to how it ties into the tax policy proposal of a certain presidential candidate. But for the purposes of level setting and refreshing, can you begin, Matt, by providing a tax equalization 101, so to speak?
Absolutely. So as everyone knows, contributions to IRAs and 401ks are done on a pre-tax basis, which essentially means the higher one's tax bracket, the more beneficial the tax benefit. This idea of tax equalization, although many people are hearing about it for the first time, is not new. In fact, there was a Senate Finance Committee meeting back in 2012 where this was discussed. And in effect, what it would do is replace the current pre-tax deductibility of 401ks and IRAs with a refundable tax credit. And the number that is being floated around out there is 26%. So what does that mean? It means that a 26% tax credit is equivalent to about a 20.5% deduction. So in short, if this were to become reality, pre-tax contributions would be less favorable to people in higher tax brackets, and pre-tax contributions would be more favorable to people in lower tax brackets, specifically lower than 20.5%.
Thank you for providing that overview to get the conversation started. So as I mentioned, a lot of focus has been placed on, you take presidential candidate Vice President Joe Biden, his tax policy proposals. What kind of role does tax equalization play in the tax policy proposal of Joe Biden?
Yes. So this was floated by the Joe Biden campaign representatives a couple of months ago and has been in the headlines ever since. So a couple of things to think about. First, this is not imminent. We, of course, have to wait and see what the elections are going, the election results are going to be in November. And then, of course, presidents don't pass tax legislation. That has to be done by an act of Congress. So all eyes are going to be on the Senate. That said, I think for purposes of perspective, it's important to keep in mind that the 2020 fiscal year end just ended for our government on September 30th. And the deficit came in, or will come in, somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.3 trillion, which is three times larger than it was fiscal year 2019. And it is the largest percentage of our country's GDP since 1945. So whenever you have widening deficits, it is not unusual for the tax benefits of retirement plan contributions to come under the microscope. That said, if this does become a reality, what we will do in 2021 or at any point is probably pivot pretty hard to Roth, particularly for higher income taxpayers.
To your point, Matt, in terms of what might come down the pike, at UBS, we've been very visible and vocal educating our clients on the implications of Joe Biden's tax policy proposals and what that might mean for our clients. So you think about wealthy families, individuals, business owners. Curious, Matt, to get your thoughts on that front, in particular business owners. But before that, Ainsley, can you weigh in a bit in terms of implications to wealthy families and individuals?
Absolutely. So when it comes to looking at implications for wealthy families and individuals, I'd say there are pretty much three areas where Biden's tax proposals really come to mind. So first off, starting with individual income tax rates. So top rate increase, Biden's proposing a top rate increase to 39.6%, up from 37%. So taxpayers making more than $400,000 would see this tax increase. Additionally, his proposal includes a lift of the Social Security taxable wage base cap on earners over $400,000. So basically what would happen is the payroll tax cap would remain the same. It would adjust each year for inflation, but then it would stop for amounts in between that payroll tax cap, right now set at $137,700, and then it would continue again for those dollars, $400,000 and above. So the implications here would be those who are still working, of course, they're going to have less take-home pay. So this just means less money in their paychecks that they can decide how to spend, save, and invest. But they're also going to end up finding more value in some of the tax advantage savings vehicles, which we're going to talk about. And then those who are retired, the tax burden, of course, for distributing out of your retirement accounts, like a traditional 401k or IRA, that's going to increase. So they'll want to just be mindful of that when deciding in which order they should withdraw from those accounts. And then you think about the capital gains rates increases. So taxpayers over $1 million in annual income, they'll be taxed at top ordinary income rate of 39.6% is what Biden's proposing. So in comparison to what those households would be taxed at today, they would be taxed at about twice the rate under Biden's proposed plan. So the implications would be it could just potentially be a much greater tax drag on those investments. And then lastly, we'll think about estate taxes. So Biden has proposed, or his campaign has proposed, reducing the exemption amount possibly as low as $3.5 million and possibly even making it retroactive to January 1st of 2021. So these possible increase in he's also proposing an increase in the estate tax rate, which is currently set at 40%. So that's pretty significant. So what this means is that while today assets pass through at death, right now they get up a step up in cost basis to the fair market value for the recipient. But Biden is also proposing that he would eliminate that step up in cost basis rule. So the implications ultimately mean if action isn't taken today in advance and the appropriate estate planning doesn't take place prior to year end, it could potentially hamper our wealthy investors' ability to transfer after-tax wealth to their heirs. So our big recommendation this year is that those wealthy investors need to see this as an urgent priority.
Thank you for that, Ainsley. Matt, anything on this front you'd like to add in? And then in particular, also curious, Matt, about implications to business owners as well.
Yes. In thinking about these proposals, this could impact business owners in three ways. First is the qualified business income deduction. So this is relatively new. This allows certain pass-through businesses, sole proprietors, partnerships, etc., to take a 20% deduction off of the top. So as you recall, in the 2017 Tax Act, the corporate tax rate was lowered. And to do something for pass-through businesses, seeing that the vast majority of businesses in this country are pass-through anyway, they were eligible to receive a 20% deduction off the top. This would eliminate that QBI deduction for anyone who makes above $400,000. Presumably, just as an aside, it would also eliminate the QBI deduction that investors are able to reap with their REIT dividends as well as income from publicly traded limited partnerships. So that's number one. Less availability of the QBI deduction. Number two and three are tools that are available to business owners that unfortunately we're not able to take advantage of in the investment world, but these are tools very common with business owners. The first is 1031 exchanges. So this is the opportunity to swap one piece of tangible property for another piece of tangible property without incurring the capital gain. 1031 exchanges would go away, again, for people who make above $400,000. And then the other thing to keep an eye on, if in fact this proposal goes through and capital gains greater than $1 million would be taxed as ordinary income, that's a significant jump from the 20% plus the 3.8% Medicare surtax up to 39.6 plus the Medicare surtax. Another tool that we'll probably be seeing a lot more of from business owners is installment sales, where they're able to spread the capital gain over so many years. That way they could try to avoid the $1 million capital gain hit all in 1 year. So those three things, the QBI deduction, the 1031 exchanges, more installment sales, And also, I know we're going to get to estate planning in just a little bit, but for business owners in particular, if there was ever a time to think about their estate planning structure, the next couple of months is as ideal as ever to take advantage of the opportunities as they present themselves today.
Thank you for that, Matt. So maybe we can spend a few moments just touching on how this all impacts retirement planning. Matt, can you touch on some strategies that one should consider in order to maximize their retirement savings at this time?
Well, the word of the day is going to be Roth. And so I alluded to this a little bit earlier. If, in fact, we are entering a new regime where taxes are likely to be higher rather than lower, then that makes Roth IRAs more valuable. And when we think about Roth in IRAs, we know that there are AGI limits, so not all clients are eligible to fund a Roth. That said, many clients have the opportunity to contribute to their 401k through a Roth. In fact, the majority of 401k plans out there do allow Roth contributions. Interestingly, however, Roth adoption by participants is single digits. So not enough people are taking advantage, and I know the objection, particularly people who live in high-tax states like New York and California. They don't want to give up the upfront deduction. It's perfectly reasonable. But if, in fact, we are headed into a regime where taxes are likely to be higher rather than lower, then Roths become much more valuable. And the other thing I would say is that a lot of your higher-income clients have already accumulated sizable six-figure 401k and tax-deferred assets. If nothing else, starting a new bucket of Roth money that's going to be funded with post-tax dollars but comes out tax-free achieves something that we like to call tax diversification, because the reality is nobody knows what the tax regime is going to be like in 5, 10, 15 years when these monies ultimately come out. But having different pots or buckets of money spread around with different treatments at least offers us the maximum amount of flexibility to take advantage of whatever the laws are when the time comes.
Thank you, Matt. Ainsley, anything on this topic you'd like to share?
Tax diversification is actually going to be the thing that I was going to mention here. It's something that we, Matt, talk a lot about at UBS. Just like you said, I mean, we see it as a major way that you can get enhanced flexibility to manage your tax liability, regardless of what's going to happen with the future of tax rates. So, like you had mentioned, it's going to be a mixture of diversifying across, like, taxable accounts, maybe a brokerage account, tax-deferred, maybe a 401k or IRA. But, yes, Roth, I think, is a pretty significant way where we can increase that tax diversification. But it's not just Roth IRAs. We can also think about HSAs if it's something that, or health savings accounts if it's something that makes sense to you and your financial plan, given your current health care coverage. But yeah, ultimately, I think when it comes to thinking about that tax diversification, just kind of thinking about how by having assets in different types of tax treatments, it just allows you to have that flexibility when it comes to accumulating your assets in retirement.
If I could also offer one more suggestion as we approach year end, and this really has nothing to do with the election. We all know that there's no required minimum distribution for 2020, which is good news. People who don't need the money can leave the money in their IRAs and 401ks and the like. That said, there is still the opportunity to do a charitable rollover. So a lot of times people sort of equated the two. I am taking an RMD. I don't need the money. Let me do a charitable rollover. Well, this year there is no RMD, obviously, but the charitable rollover opportunity is alive and well. So for people, even though they don't have an RMD, if there's a cause that's important to them and they want to benefit that cause, it's still a great opportunity to take advantage of the charitable rollover up to $100,000 per person. Obviously, you don't get the deduction, but you also don't have the 1099 income. So people can still take advantage of that in 2020, even though there's no RMD requirement for this year.
I'm glad you brought year-end up. I know we want to get to estate planning. Maybe before that, since we're on this topic, I know year-end quickly approaching. Ainsley, anything else in the way of tax planning steps, considerations that clients should be taking today?
No, I'd say in addition to that tax diversification, I mean, with open enrollment coming up, for those who are still working, that's certainly an area, I mean, open enrollment doesn't mean that this is the one and only time you can figure out which retirement accounts through your employer you can contribute to, but it's a great time. It's just kind of like a reminder to look through your retirement plans that you have available to you through your workplace, and it's a good reminder to bring this up as you have those discussions with your advisor. Another thing that also comes up often when it comes to year-end tax planning is tax loss harvesting, although it is certainly something that can be done year-round. But if you have investments that have lost value, you can sell them and use them. You can use those losses to offset capital gains and carry them forward, and you can carry forward any unused amounts into future years. So that's certainly an area where you can add some benefit if that makes sense within your financial plan by year end.
And a final strategy I'll throw out there for 2020 year-end tax planning is donor-advised funds. We're big fans of donor-advised funds, so just to review, this gives you the ability to take the deduction now. However, you don't need to determine the cause or the charity that's going to receive the benefit of your generosity until some point in the future, but you get the deduction now. And I realize that far fewer people itemize with the $24,000 standard deduction if you're married, $12,000 if you're single, but your higher income clients who are charitably inclined, they're going to meet that hurdle. And so if, in fact, itemized deductions under the Biden proposal are going to be capped at 28% in the future, then you might want to think about accelerating your deductions into 2020, and a donor-advised fund is a wonderful way to do that, as well as the qualitative benefits of teaching children and other family members about the role of philanthropy in the family.
Thank you for that, Matt and Ainsley. It's always amazing how quickly the year end comes, so it's never too early to start thinking about this and start planning and being proactive. So as I mentioned, I do want to revisit the topic of estate planning. So on that front, Ainsley, what kinds of actions should clients be taking today? I know we've been reinforcing the fact that there are some potentially significant changes coming down the pike with respect to U.S. tax policy. So in anticipation of that, what should be done today?
So when we think about tax changes that could potentially come down the line in the future, I mean, typically we would say, you know, don't make any significant changes to your financial plan. Take any action based off of one outcome and then have the other outcome actually be what happens in reality, and then you're just kind of stuck in a situation that you weren't necessarily planning for. But when it comes to estate planning this year, that's really where we see an opportunity for clients to take action, particularly our wealthy clients, because under current law, a couple can give away about $23 million during their lifetime or at death without being subject to gift and estate taxes, which are about 40% right now. So for wealthy families, 2020 may be the very last year to benefit from these relaxed estate planning terms, because without congressional action, these amounts are set to continue to increase with inflation through 2025, but after which they're going to decrease back to about $5 million per individual. But with congressional action, it's likely that this sunset will come much earlier and that the exemption could be set even lower under a Democratic administration or Congress. So what's more, I'd say they have also proposed sunsetting the exemption as early as next year, which could be applied retroactively to the beginning of 2021. So what this means is that a family could potentially gift away millions of dollars on December 31st of this year without having to pay those gift and estate taxes. However, that same exact transaction the very next day on Jan 1, 2021, you could end up paying millions of dollars in taxes for that same exact transaction. So to take advantage of these current and favorable estate tax policies right now, you know, what we're suggesting is you need to accelerate that lifetime gifting. It is, of course, possible that the lifetime exemption could go up a little next year as planned, but either way, I'd say, even if that happens, being proactive today won't stop you from taking advantage of the higher exemption by transferring the incremental amount out of your estate. So also, lastly, as an added incentive to be proactive before year end, if you wait to take action until the election outcome is determined, you may already be too late. And the reason for that is because estate planning can take a lot of time. But also, if everyone else is waiting until the election outcome, your state attorney and your financial advisor, they're all going to be getting the same exact calls. So I think by giving yourself a little bit more time, you can just be sure that you're going to have the time to have those discussions with your family and also be able to coordinate that all with your with all parties that are going to be involved.
Thank you, Ainsley. Matt, any thoughts on the topic of estate planning you'd like to share with us?
Well, getting back to the business owner, this is a terrific opportunity, as Ainsley mentioned. Business owners have unique planning strategies because of their closely held business interests, in that they can take advantage of discounts on gifts due to lack of marketability and minority-owned interests. A couple of years ago, someone from Treasury decided, well, maybe it's time to take away those gift valuation discounts, and it never got any traction. It never got any legs. So being able to take advantage of discounting is still alive and well. And although it's beyond the scope of today's call, there are some advanced strategies that work very, very well with businesses that are being transferred among family members, things such as zeroed-out grants and intentionally defective grantor trusts. Again, they're beyond the scope of today's call, but the good news is that there are wealth planning professionals at UBS that could help you and your clients address some of these more sophisticated planning opportunities. The last thing I'll say is a special type of trust is back in fashion. Clearly, there are people who are very tempted to take advantage of the generous exclusions as they present themselves today, but then they're concerned if something should happen in their lives down the road. Well, gifts are irrevocable, so how do I get the money back? Well, you can't get the money back, otherwise it's not a completed gift. So the trusts that are very much in fashion today is something called a spousal lifetime appointment trust. And the way that it would work is each spouse sets up a slot for each other. You take advantage of today's very generous exclusion amounts. However, provided that the spouse meets what's called an ascertainable standard, things like health, education, maintenance, and support, there's still an opportunity to go in and take some of that money back. It's a little bit more complicated than perhaps I'm making it out to be, but it is the trust that a lot of people who kind of find themselves caught. I don't have an estate planning problem today from a tax perspective, but I could very well have an estate tax problem tomorrow, depending upon what happens. How can I have my cake and eat it too? A slide is something that those families really ought to take a look at. And again, the folks at UBS can walk your clients through how those would work.
Well, Matt and Ainsley, very productive call, very valuable and helpful insights. We covered a lot of ground in a very short span, but great catching up with the both of you. And thank you again for your time and joining us on UBS On Air today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.